Prologue. Hell on Earth. Washington, D.C. Possibly sometime in the near future. A 1 megaton thermonuclear weapon from the initial fireball. It is a megafire beyond measure. Gas lines explode one after the next, acting like giant blowtorches or flamethrowers, spewing steady streams of fire. Tanks containing flammable materials burst open. Chemical factories explode. Pilot lights on water heaters and furnaces act like torchlighters, setting anything not already burning alight. Collapsed buildings become like giant ovens. People everywhere burn alive. Open gaps in floors and roofs behave like chimneys. Carbon dioxide from the firestorms sinks down and settles into the metro's subway tunnels, asphyxiating riders in their seats. People seeking shelter in basements and other spaces below ground vomit, convulse, become comatose, and die. Anyone above ground who is looking directly at the blast, in some cases as far as 13 miles away, becomes blinded. 7.5 miles out from ground zero, in a 15-mile diameter ring around the Pentagon, the five-psi zone, cars and buses crash into one another. Asphalt streets turn to liquid from the intense heat, trapping survivors as if caught in molten lava or quicksand. Hurricane-force winds fuel hundreds of fires into thousands of fires, into millions of them. 10 miles out, hot burning ash and flaming wind-borne debris ignite new fires, and one after another, they continue to conflate. All of Washington, D.C. becomes one complex firestorm, a mega-inferno, soon to become a mesocyclone of fire. 8, maybe 9 minutes pass. 10 and 12 miles out from ground zero, in the one-psi zone, survivors shuffle in shock like the almost dead, unsure of what just happened, desperate to escape. Tens of thousands of people here have ruptured lungs. Crows, sparrows, and pigeons flying overhead catch on fire and drop from the sky as if it is raining birds. There is no electricity, no phone service, no 911. The localized electromagnetic pulse of the bomb obliterates all radio, internet, and TV. Cars with electric ignition systems in a several-mile ring outside the blast zone cannot restart. Water stations can't pump water. Saturated with lethal levels of radiation, the entire area is a no-go zone for first responders. Not for days will the rare survivors realize help was never on the way. Those who somehow manage to escape death by the initial blast, shockwave, and firestorm suddenly realize an insidious truth about nuclear war: that they are entirely on their own. Former FEMA director Craig Fugate tells us their only hope for survival is to figure out how to self-survive. That here begins a fight for food, water, Pedialyte. How and why do U.S. defense scientists know such hideous things and with exacting precision? How does the U.S. government know so many nuclear effects-related facts while the general public remains blind? The answer is as grotesque as the questions themselves, because for all these years, since the end of World War II, the U.S. government has been preparing for and rehearsing plans for a general nuclear war. A nuclear World War III that is guaranteed to leave at minimum 2 billion dead. To know this answer more specifically, we go back in time, more than 60 years, to December 1960, to U.S. Strategic Air Command and a secret meeting that took place there.